From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in a leaked email, an internal email sent to communication staff at the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency. The Guardian and other news outlets reported this week that the email urged EPA staff to downplay certainty about climate change. From The Guardian, quote, "The email sets out ambiguous talking points such as human activity impacts our changing climate in some manner, the ability to measure with precision the degree and extent of that impact and what to do about it are subject to continuing debate and dialogue." The email adds that while there has been extensive research and a host of published reports on climate change, clear gaps remain, including our understanding of the role of human activity and what we can do about it, end quote. Now, this is not the first time that a government agency has urged its staff to downplay climate change. We're looking at you, Florida. But here's why I'm opening the hour on this story. Rochester is getting ready for its fourth annual Fast Forward Film Festival. Now, the festival consists of nearly 20 films, all of them 5 minutes or fewer. The films focus on environmental themes, not just climate change. This year, they'll range from documentary-style filmmaking about energy-efficient homes to a fictional and futuristic look at a world essentially without nature. The founder of the festival has said that he wants Fast Forward to be a vehicle for conversation, perhaps inspiration. Dr. Andy Stern has always told me that he doesn't want to get too bogged down in politics and policy because he says no one has all of the answers. He doesn't want tribalism that blocks productive conversation. He wants to open the dialogue. Well, this hour, I'm going to ask him whether that's becoming more difficult given the governmental action or inaction on climate change. And the festival is coming up April 13th and 14th. My guests this hour include Dr. Andy Stern, founder of the Fast Forward Film Festival. Back again. Great to have you back here. Thank you for being
here. Great to be here. Thank you.
All right. Also with us, Ben Mills, director of Chimera, 2018 official adult selection. I've had a chance to see it. We'll talk about it in a minute. Ben, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And Danielle Moore is a writer, producer, and actor in Chimera. Danielle, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
Also with us is Sean Donnelly, producer and director of Superhouse, which is a 2018 official adult selection. Sean, welcome to you.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And Kate McCardle is a member of the Advisory Council for the Fast Forward Film Festival and a community outreach coordinator at the New York State Pollution Prevention Institute. Welcome to you.
Thanks for having me.
All right, Dr. Stern, I didn't want to misquote you at the outset, but is it fair to say that this festival for you, it's not meant to be political, it's meant to be a community conversation? I mean, this is not a climate change festival, it's a film festival. Is that fair?
Well, it's an environmental film festival,
yeah.
But the last thing we want to do is create more division, more polarization in the world. We got plenty, especially in this country. So we don't try to convince, we don't try to persuade, we don't have ideology. We allow our filmmakers, some of whom are here, to express their heartfelt sense of what's happening in the world. And, you know, I think when anyone really expresses something heartfelt, people connect with that. No matter what ideology they support, you connect with people who are really authentic and sincerely expressing themselves. So that's the concept.
Is it getting harder to avoid politics when we talk about environmental issues and climate?
Yeah. It is challenging now to have a conversation about climate that is not upsetting, depressing, boring to many people. I've heard enough about that. But again, what we do here is we've found a way to talk about the environment that is inspiring, empowering, touches hearts and souls. And that's what art at its best can do.
Without politics.
Without politics.
Okay. Right. Kate McCarley, you agree with that?
I agree. I agree you can do that. Of course, politics is always going to come into the conversation. But I think what the film festival does really well is to start those conversations in a way that is creative and within a framework of film, which is easily accessible. So it may bring people to the event and view these films that normally wouldn't have been paying attention to them. And it also builds this sense of place, really. So you learn about things that you may have no idea about that were happening in your own community. So, Evan, I don't want to avoid your comment about politics, but I do think that it inspires people to change. And if I know everyone in this room has been to the film festival, it's a great balance of inspiration and some concern. It gets people inspired to make some change.
Yeah, I don't think you're avoiding it, but I want to be clear. I agree with Dr. Stern and Kate and the people behind the Fast Forward Film Festival when they say that climate environmental issues shouldn't be political.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be the kind of issue where if I tell you if I'm a registered Republican or a Democrat, you know my views on the environment just based on political party, and it's tribal that way. But it has sort of become that way. And I'll just tell you, maybe at the risk of sounding a little silly, I just got back from 10 days in Spain with the WXXI Travel Club, and there are windmills everywhere. I mean, you see a few windmills around here, around 104 and a few places. They're everywhere in Spain. They want to be 80% renewable real soon. And I asked people who are of all different backgrounds, political separatists in Catalonia and people who identify as more politically conservative in Spain and politically liberal, you know, what do you think about the windmills on the landscape? Everybody looks at me like, I don't understand the question. Why is that a problem?
Right.
Whereas here it becomes this instant angry issue where some people are upset. Yeah. It just seems logical there, and it's not political.
Mm-hmm.
No matter your, but here it seems political.
Yeah, it certainly is political, but I think what we do and what we assume that Republicans don't care about the environment and
I would never say that, by the way.
But
I understand that's the caricature.
That's the stereotype, and that's not at all the case. And what I think this film can do, and what programs like this do is, it really is an accessible way to build a sense of community, and people learn about what is happening. And once somebody has that attachment to place, and we all, I mean, think about your own home. Think about the way you want to protect your home and keep your home safe. The way we care about the things, whether it be, our unfortunately, cars some things that may burn some fossil fuels. We care about these things. And this film really has, what I've been most impressed with is the way that people have shown up there that I wouldn't expect. At the festival and have seen these films. And in 2016, the New York State Pollution Prevention Institute, which I can talk a little bit more about, which is based at RIT, funded the film festival to create a green story guide. And what it did was it paired these films with a guide for students. So this program actually reached 1,500 students across the Rochester area, and they were able to put out 2,000 of these guides, which got children in this region thinking about, okay, you've watched this film. How did you feel? You know, what did you think after watching it? But then it provided some information about how to get involved, whether it was through film or organizing a zero waste event or even just brainstorming how children could create change themselves. So it's much more than a film festival in that it's providing a tool for teachers to talk about with their students and also the community to bring back to their own maybe local government. And that's where it does get political, Evan, is that people learn from these things and say, oh, look, there's community choice aggregate that I can bring to my community, and we can bulk buy greener power. So I think that is the tool, and I've been really impressed with Fast Forward Film Festival over the how many years now?
This is our fourth.
I didn't want to be inaccurate.
And let me just
hop
in. Thank
you,
Kate. It's wonderful to hear all that. And yes, one of the things that happens at the festival is we all learn about amazing people doing amazing things in Rochester environmental work, things that are just not known. And I think that's true in every community. And the whole concept of this festival and making it a requirement that every filmmaker live here is to make it all about community, make it all about this place, because that's where meaningful initiatives towards climate mitigation are going to happen. That's where the energy that's going to end up in science-based policy is going to start. So that's sort of a foundation. You know, we just don't have our head in the clouds that this is, art for no purpose. We are in a crisis. And this is our way of shining light on what needs to be done.
The fourth annual is coming up here. And before we talk to some of the filmmakers, I want to let our listeners know, if you want to join the conversation, we'll get to some of your phone calls starting in a moment. It's 844-295-TALK. That's toll free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Kate, Andy, the details coming up that people need to know about, and I say this not as a booster, but the fact is the film festival has sold out in the past, and so it's likely to do that again. It's 13th and 14th. What's coming up here, Andy?
Yeah, we have sold out at both screenings all 3 years, which is incredible. We have two screenings this year, as we have had in the past. The first is April 13th at the Little Theater. That begins at 7 o'clock. Tickets are available online and cost $8. And then our gala evening, which is actually quite a magical night. We have an awards festival. We honor, all the filmmakers, which is an amazing cross-section, inner city classrooms and professional filmmakers, amateurs, students. We're giving this year $2,000 to winners. So it's very competitive and exciting. And so that's Saturday night, April 14, starts at 6:30. Adults, $30. Students and seniors, $25. But that includes the very incredible party that will precede the festival.
Okay. So you want to get online? Get online where to get this?
FastForwardRock.org.
FastForwardRock, ROC.org, for all of that's coming up here. Before we talk films, Andrew in Irondequoit wants to jump in on something he's heard us talking about right off the top here. Go ahead, Andrew.
Yeah, I think it became political when you guys said the science is over. The science is never over. My brother, who's a good liberal Democrat, grew up in Washington, D.C., works for the D.C. government. He tests water on the Potomac and that other river down there. My tongue. Anyway, he said, I can't see the water level going up. And we have a house down in Ocean City, Maryland. And he says, I haven't seen the water level go up one inch. And he's starting to become a climate skeptic.
Okay, so Andrew, can you stay there for one sec?
Sure.
All right, so there's a couple of things here I want to address. Number one, to the extent that anybody has said the science is settled, I think what you're referring to is sometimes you'll hear people say, look, the science is settled.
I hear Democrats say the science is settled.
Okay. So what I want to address with that is I agree with you that there is a precarious nature to saying there is finality in understanding exactly what's happening. Because what's happening
is something that you can't measure.
No. Hold on. We can measure. There's many things we can measure, Andrew. But it is complex. And to say something is done or settled, I'm with you in that it has an air of finality that sometimes is dismissive. So I grant you that. But there are plenty of things.
Who said the science is settled, Evan? The Democrats said the science is settled. Mm. Therefore, this is the new deal. This is the new expensive deal.
Andrew, I understand. Well, I'm trying to work with you on why you're frustrated with that. But I can also tell you that scientists tend to say there are certain things that we know to be true. That doesn't mean that we can't learn more or have a better understanding of what is exactly happening to a certain degree, but we have enough data now to know several things. Are humans impacting the climate? Yes, we know that. Are humans impacting the climate in a way that is causing a more rapid change than we've seen in tens of thousands of years? Yes, we have data that says we know that. And then what we don't know is how quickly can we actually slow that down or even reverse it? And that is a policy question. But the science question, I'm with you to say it's not over. Science is never over. Science is always learning. But there's enough data to say that we have some scientific verification on things, and I don't think we should be afraid of that. I'm not sure why that is concerning.
Because it's so expensive, that's why.
Hold on, help me with that. What's expensive?
All the plans of the environmentalists cost
okay,
a lot of
okay.
money.
Okay, okay. All right, so what you're talking about is the policy prescription is you view as economically deleterious.
Look, Evan, when Obama's guy came out and said gas needs to be $10 a gallon, that freaked a lot of people out, okay?
Yeah, no, I understand, but you're now talking about policy and not the science, and I don't want to miss. And I would also say, was it your brother who didn't see the water rise?
He's still down on the water every day. He says, I haven't seen a rise.
He should go to Miami Beach.
He says,
please send him to Miami Beach. Andrew.
He's, Yes.
What we should not do is pick and choose single little anecdotes.
Oh, yeah, I live
on a creek. It didn't
that.
Go up yesterday.
Yeah.
I don't know about climate change.
Yeah.
You know,
no.
Send them to Miami Beach, but don't just send them to Miami Beach.
Right.
I would urge reading on the water. What is happening, especially in economically disadvantaged communities, island communities, this is happening now. And so Kate McArdle wants to jump in. Stay there, Andrew. I'm really glad you called. Go ahead, Kate.
And I would just say, jump on New York State Pollution Prevention Institute's website and look at ways to improve energy efficiencies. And, you know, our institute is developed. Yes, we are funded through the Department of Environmental Conservation, but we are working directly with businesses to take some of these complex environmental problems, many of them related to climate change. So obviously energy efficiency is one that we're dealing with, but also changing out of using toxics in manufacturing, remanufacturing, looking at more sustainable supply chain. The work that we're doing and has evidence to not only save money by preventing pollution from happening in the first place, but also creating processes that are more efficient and in the long term, save money. And when we save money for these businesses across New York State, they're able to create jobs and really bring new businesses here to New York State. We also have a green technology accelerator program. So when a company has a new technology, we can validate that and test that for them. And the researchers at RIT are helping them do that. So there's plenty of evidence out there to show that this actually can save money in the long term.
Ben, Kate, to Andrew's point there, Andrew is expressing what a lot of people, especially people who tend to be politically conservative, are concerned about, which mm-hmm. is whatever the science says, mm-hmm. we can't afford the solution that you're
right.
proposing.
Right.
And it sounds to me like you're at least trying to engage with that.
Of course. And we're based at a Rochester Institute of Technology. There's people from every end of the spectrum there, and we're all working together because we believe that we can make a difference to improve the environment, and we have evidence of that. So
as a conservative, I do applaud your efforts, okay, to make things efficient and all of this, okay? That's great. I'm not against most of the stuff you do, but I was just saying, you know, shouldn't be political. Okay, well, then don't say the science is over.
The science isn't over.
And if the water level doesn't start rising in the next 5 or 10 years, then you got to start looking at your blackboards again.
All right, Andrew, I appreciate the phone call. Number one, I'm just going to say it again. The water is rising in certain places, and maybe not where your brother is, but I guarantee you that this is being studied right now. The science is not over, but just as in the science is not over on gravity, we have an idea on gravity. We're pretty sure about gravity. But if nobody left a manual for the creation of gravity that we're going to say, you know, so it's a theory. People misuse the word theory all the time. It's like it's a guess. It's not a guess. And we would instantly revise our understanding of gravity if we had overwhelming evidence that we were wrong about it. And that's where we're sort of moving in the direction of climate change. But I'm with you, Andrew. Saying things are certain and done, maybe that's a little heavy-handed. Go ahead, Andy.
Yes, I just have to jump in here. And Andrew, thank you so much for calling, because I get these questions constantly as I talk around the country and so on. And I just don't want to leave listeners with the idea that because science never says they're certain, in fact, there is absolute certainty that there is global warming, that sea levels are rising, that CO2 is increased in the atmosphere and in the oceans, and that fairly rapidly we are headed toward unimaginable, unprecedented human suffering due to climate change. There is absolutely no controversy about that in the scientific world, even though there's a huge amount that still needs to be determined for sure. I work with climate scientists a lot in what I do, and that's how they live their lives, trying to answer the uncertainties. But the political problem in this country is so getting in the way. Who doesn't want their children and grandchildren to inherit a beautiful place to live like we have? Who can say they don't want that? Everybody wants that. But this tribalism between Democrats and Republicans increasingly defining their tribe as being against the other tribe isn't helpful.
We're talking about the Fast Forward Film Festival, which is coming your way April 13th, and then more events on the 14th, fastforwardrockroc.org. For tickets, information on the films, and if you want to continue on the conversation, it's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Andrew, thanks again for the phone call. I really appreciate that. These are important conversations to have. And producer Megan Mack, who, by the way, did a remarkably outstanding job hosting this program for the last 10 days. And some of you might be disappointed that I'm back. I'm sorry about that. But she is checking right now on just some of the data that you can find pretty quickly from the New York Times, from other sources on this. Here's from climate.gov. Sea level has been rising over the past century, and the rate has increased in recent decades. In 2016, global sea level was 3.2 inches above the 1993 average, the highest annual average in the satellite record. Sea level continues to rise at a rate of just over 1/8 of an inch per year due to a combination of melting glaciers and ice sheets and thermal expansion of seawater as it warms. That is climate.gov. And, Andrew, if we can track it down, I know New York Times and others have covered it pretty extensively of what it's already doing. Let's talk about some of the films, because the films come from a wide range. How many films this year, Andy?
19.
19 films. How many submissions did you have?
Oh, 500?
I mean, I remember, I think I've talked to you every year because I've been on this program every year. You've done it, right? So your fourth year. I think it was something like, 50 films and 100 films. So you're...
Well, that's... No. 500. Most of those are not... Don't satisfy our criteria. They're either made by someone who doesn't live here, or they're too long, or they're really unrelated to environmental concerns. So we just reject those out of hand. Locally, I think there's been about 100 every single year, including this year.
Okay. And that makes it pretty difficult. How do you decide who gets in and who does not?
Right. We have a jury. We have four jurors, and they are... very experienced. The film critic for City Newspaper is one of our jurors. We've got one person at the George Eastman Museum. You can't get more sophisticated about film criticism than they are. We have Anahita Williamson at the Environmental Protection Agency, mm-hmm. who is head of the Department of Environmental Science, or what's left of it at this point, I suppose.
And a former Rochesterian from the New York State Pollution Prevention.
Absolutely. Right. And she brings our science in. Mm-hmm. And then Muffy Meyer, who is quite a well-known international and national documentary filmmaker from New York City. So these all people weigh in, and whoever gets the most votes is in. Very straightforward, but it's very professional juried show.
And Mary Lou and Arondaquit called to ask, for people who can't go to the festival itself, how can they see the films?
After the festival is over, we will put the program online, so you will be able to see it. But I would just say it is not like being there with 500 people at the Dryden Theater, all that energy. We have filmmakers here. Think about amateur, first-time filmmakers having the film shown in that elegant place, that historic, elegant place, to a very intimidating crowd of 500 people. I will have our filmmakers speak to that.
Okay, but if you can't, you can watch the films online. Can you watch past year's films online?
Yes, they're all online.
It's Fast Forward Rock, ROC. .org. Okay. So why don't we do this? Why don't we take one more phone call, and then we're gonna, in our second half hour, we're going to talk to Ben Mills, who's the director of Chimera, and Danielle Moore, and Sean Donnelly, who are here, who are going to have those films shown at Fast Forward coming up here. But Nell in Penfield wants to weigh in next. Go ahead, Nell.
Yeah, hi. I just want to make my opinion known about what Andrew was complaining about. All the Democrats say that the science is over. Democrat, I feel strongly that there's a lot of Democrats who understand the science is not over and would not say that. So it's not helpful to generalize like that, as it is not helpful to say that all conservatives debunk the science of climate change.
Right.
So I think there's various perspectives that we ought to respect each other's opinions and not generalize like that. All Democrats do not say that the science is over, and be kind of ludicrous, because the whole purpose of science is to keep on learning. And that's what we intend to do. But as you say, there is a lot of evidence that climate change is happening and humans contribute to it. and we can't deny the science that's out there. Thanks.
Thank you. Now, I think that's well said, and I think that I don't think anybody in the studio, certainly Andy, has been expressing this for years. You know, we generalize that at our own peril here because there's a lot of thoughtful people, but political tribalism is now pretty well studied and it's pretty entrenched. And so I think really well-meaning people who do want, we all want the best things, end up sort of picking sides and picking teams, and certain issues end up on one side or another. We'll try to generalize a little bit less here. So thank you, Nell. I appreciate that phone call. 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free. 844-295-8255. After our only break of the hour, how do the filmmakers decide what they wanted to focus on? And what is it like to get selected when there's, well, you know, less than a 1 in 5 chance that your film's in? We're going to hear from a couple of the films that are in Fast Forward coming up after this break. Coming up in our second hour, the future of Parkinson's disease and how research happens and does not happen. You might have seen some major companies cutting Parkinson's research recently, but some research is still going on, some of it right here at the University of Rochester Medical Center. We'll talk about how the trials work, they hope to accomplish, what patients are dealing with, and a lot more coming up next hour. Welcome back to Connections. For Andrew and for listeners like Andrew who are, you know, just kind of waiting for a little bit more evidence or wondering about sea levels and things like that, Jeff Goodell, G-O-D-E-L-L, is the author of a book called The Water Will Come, and that is something that's been covered pretty extensively. Miami Beach, South Brooklyn, Boston's Back Bay, what they have in terms of projections, what that means for them, what the Paris Agreement of 2015 will do or won't do enough. So that's a pretty good source if you want to check that out. And Andy and I were just talking very briefly during our break that, you know, the notion of the science is over that Andrew said, I agree with him that science is never over. But that can't be a cop-out to then throw up our arms and say, well, we'll never have certainty or we'll never stop learning, so how can we really know? There are certain times, I think, Andy, where we have to say, we know enough to say certain things pretty solidly. Fair? Right.
There are several problems here. One is the understanding of the word uncertainty. Uncertainty means we don't know. But in science, that's not what it means. Another thing is the nature of opinion. That everyone is entitled to their opinion is it's a meme. It's a credo in democracies. But in fact, there are opinions that are informed and opinions that are not. And about climate science, the opinion of a climate scientist is informed, and a person who is not informed. And I think it's really critical that we recognize that experts have a more valid opinion.
I love it. And this makes both producer Megan Mack and I think of the Semmelweis reflex. And the Semmelweis reflex or Semmelweis effect is a metaphor for the reflex-like tendency to reject new evidence or new knowledge because it contradicts established norms, beliefs, or paradigms. It was just, was it yesterday, I think, that Megan talked to Daniel Bainbridge, who was just an awesome guest. And if you missed that conversation, go to wxxinews.org/connections, download it and listen to the whole thing. But they get to the Semmelweis effect, and we see it in a lot of places. So thank you, and I appreciate that point. So we'll get back to your phone calls and emails, which are coming. This is, see, look what you do with Fast Forward. You do spark conversation, and that is part of the goal here. Year 4 is upon us, fastforwardrock.org, fastforwardroc.org. I want to talk to some of the filmmakers involved here, and I'll start with Sean Donnelly, who's the producer and director of Superhouse, which has been selected here. Superhouse is not a fictional story. It's a real thing. What's a superhouse?
Superhouse is my term for what's known worldwide as a passive house, a house that's designed to be so airtight and so efficient that it basically needs no furnace. So when I heard the owner of the local superhouse describe his house, he used the word super so many times, talking about how super comfortable it was. I said, this is the title of my film, Superhouse.
All right. And a lot of great visuals, a lot of great vistas. You see the house, which is where?
It's in Honeoye Falls.
And it is a real thing. And for lack of a better word, it works.
Yeah, exactly. That's what the owner, Matt, said. He said, this superhouse works, and every superhouse works.
What's your background as a filmmaker?
Oh, as a filmmaker, I'd say, in 2013, I was co-producer of the feature film on climate change called Comfort Zone. That's my last major film I made. So that, basically, with my two co-producers, we went into the subject of climate change from three different angles and explored as much as we could, and it's being shown now in colleges around the Northeast and around the country. And then in 2015, the first Fast Forward Film Festival started, and I took a concept that we couldn't basically fit into that film comfort zone, and I said, oh, let's tell the story of a near miss when the Earth was almost experienced catastrophic destruction, and make that into a little 3.5-minute film and put it in the first Fast Forward Film Festival. So that was, it was a great inspiration for me to do these short little, highly informational projects.
5 minutes or less. How long does Superhouse run?
4 minutes and 59 seconds and a half seconds. Because the credits are fast.
The credits are fast. What was the original cut that you had to edit down from?
Well, I started out maybe 9 minutes. Then I said, forget it. Throw out this. You have to basically design it for 5 minutes or it's not going to work.
So anybody who's ever tried to write a book, then imagine your editor says, we can do this, but we need your 240-page book to be 100 pages. And you go, oh, my gosh, this is like losing children. So you cut. How difficult was it to cut?
Oh, it's hard. I mean, taking whole ideas that usually there's a saying in film that you have to throw out your babies, you know, the favorite little pieces that you like that just don't work in the story. And so that's what you do. You go through, and that's what I did. Yeah, it's difficult. But
you use a lot of really helpful effects for the viewer, just in terms of, we'll talk a little bit about airflow here, fresh air and stale air and how air moves. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, yeah. Well, a passive house needs to have proper ventilation. If you build them like they tried to build in the 70s, they were airtight, but they didn't have ventilation. And these houses became sick houses very quickly. The air became toxic. So one of the passive house requirements for the passive house standard is they need to have, the house changes its air completely with outside air every 3 hours. So the fresh air comes in through the main living spaces and the bedrooms, and it goes out through the kitchen and the bathroom, all the bathrooms, and that airflow is continuous in the house.
There's a moment in the film where someone says, you know, you could scorch popcorn in the microwave, mm-hmm. which everyone's familiar with that smell. And in just, you know, a couple of hours, that smell is completely out of the house.
Yeah, and baking bread, anything, the good smells and the bad smells, but you know, it's a trade-off.
Now, as you mentioned, it was in the 1970s during, I think mentioned in the film, during the oil embargo.
Yeah, and right after that, yeah.
That super insulated homes were being built. But again, take us back a little bit more about what was happening then, because this seemed like it was ripe for a movement in the 1970s, but people literally got sick?
Well, yeah, and in the U.S. people did, and I think this was going on in other places mm-hmm. around the world too. When the first oil embargo hit and then people started to realize their houses were basically uninsulated, they sealed them up and they didn't know about air quality. People weren't even aware of the amount of particulates that were in the air and the toxins that furniture is made of and carpets and everything like that. And mold starts to grow. You don't control humidity, things like that. So the scientists, there was a German and a Swedish scientist in around late 80s, I think 88 was when they started in Germany. They started the passive house standard, and then they said they realized we need to introduce ventilation, and they put in a heat exchanger that exchanges heat and humidity, and that's the only thing that basically makes this work.
Your term super house is a much better marketing term than passive house.
Than passive house, thank you.
It really is. They should be thanking you for that. What is your goal as a filmmaker with this?
Oh, I really want to spread the word to people, and I'm one of these people that we assume that our houses are efficient and well sealed, and we just pay our heat bill every.
Actually, I make no assumptions. Okay. For my house.
Yeah.
Have you seen my bills?
Okay. But my house was built in 1994, and I had assumed it was good enough, pretty good. I didn't do the test, and finally, you know, making these films is a tool to tell other people, but also as a filmmaker, it's a journey for me to say, I wonder if I'm taking this knowledge into account, and if I need to do the same test. So the test they do to test this super house is a blower door test, and they depressurize the house and look for leaks. And when he looks for leaks, when Matt, the builder of the super house, looks for leaks, he finds a tiny number. When I did the test on my house just a few months ago, and I was like, oh no, I need to do some insulation. So I'll be doing insulation very, very soon in my house. I'd like to inspire other people to just learn this little bit of information that I've learned, and then look at ourselves and our lives around us and see what we can do.
Yeah, because again, in 5 minutes in this film, and I don't think we're giving too much away, no one's going to not go to the festival because you heard about this film, and you're going to want to see the visuals, the creative filmmaking involved here really helps you see what's going on inside a house like this. But I do want to ask you that when you see a film like this and you see a house that's already sort of at the mountaintop of what's possible, I think a couple of things can happen. Number one, everybody wants to know how much it costs. Number two, it can be a little paralyzing because people might feel that all these things have to happen and I don't think I can do that. What you're talking about here, just with insulation, is sort of a step-by-step that people probably can do.
Exactly. And there's something called a deep energy retrofit, which is like this is where you find yourself, most people find themselves, I already have a house. I love your passive house. I'm never going to build a new house like that. I'm going to live here for 20 years.
It's a super house.
Yeah. And so, but then your alternative is the energy retrofit. And that's just a matter of getting an energy assessment done. And I would love everyone, if I can accomplish nothing else, I would love everyone who sees this film to get an energy audit. It's free, paid for by NYSERDA. New York State will pay them to depressurize your house and test it. And you'll be amazed. And some people will have well-insulated houses and some, most of us won't. So
it's free to get that?
Yeah. It's free. It's paid for by NYSERDA. Yeah.
How do you get that?
Yeah, you can call them. But what I just wanted to point out, that's a perfect example of a program that, is so cost-saving for the consumer and also is making an environmental impact. And there's so many examples of those things. So I just, from earlier in this conversation from our caller, yes, there is funding for that through NYSERDA. And I think you can just Google it and get somebody to come out and look at your home. But perfect example.
Let me just jump
in
and say, just listen to Sean's passion around this. And this is what the festival does. You know, every filmmaker wants an audience. And this is a film crazy town. And there's a ton going on. And one of the things I'm proud about at this festival is we give audiences to filmmakers so that people like Sean, with passion about this, can express themselves in the way they choose to. Thanks.
And in the same way that you just heard Kate McArdle talking about, or you heard the filmmaker himself, Sean, talking about, you want people to get this estimate. It can be free. Mm-hmm. I've always thought, in the last few years, we talk a lot about solar. Every time we do a show on solar, our phones go nuts because people want to know. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, I don't think I'm speaking out of school. I think you can at least get a free estimate. I mean, if you are wondering, I got too much shade or I got this, I think you can, and most people still don't do that. I mean, people are busy, I get it, but you can get free estimates.
Oh, you certainly can. And Pathstone is the energy group here in Rochester that you can call locally that can make the connections for the energy, home energy inspection in the city.
All right, so there's a chance to see one of the films, Sean Donnelly. By the way, 19 films chosen, and I know you've got quite a resume when it comes to filmmaking, but is it still a thrill to get selected for a festival
like
this?
Yeah, it is. And I really made this film specifically for this festival. It's more important to me to get into the Fast Forward Film Festival than all the other environmental film festivals I've submitted to around the country, because I love this festival. It's home. I live here.
It's Callback Friday, by the way, because now I'm thinking of the conversation that Megan Mack had with Linda Maroney and the folks from the One Take Film Festival coming up, and the conversation about the challenge and the passion behind documentary filmmaking stuff. There aren't huge bags of money that just fall out of the sky for documentary filmmakers, are there?
Right. No, it's a good way to lose a lot of money, along with vineyards and starting a golf course right up there.
Vineyards, that's a good one. They say that if you want to end up with $1 million in the wine industry, you need to start with $10 million. So documentary filmmaking really is, as Andy says, a passion project. So there's a chance to see Superhouse, which is one of the 2018 official adult selections. I want to turn now to Ben Mills and Danielle Moore, who are the directors of, well, I keep using the term Chimera. How do you pronounce it?
Chimera.
Okay, good. Okay. Yeah. So Chimera is the name of the film, and this one took me a little bit to get my head around. I'm watching this going, all right, where am I? Wait a second. Where in the dark is this woman? Tell me, I want to be a little more careful not to give everything away with your film, because it's a little different than Superhouse, but I do want you to tell me a little bit behind the vision, how you guys came up with it. So actually, why don't you swing over to this mic for me here, Danielle, because our studio is full.
Thank you.
Ben and Danielle, tell me how this one came together.
Okay, I guess, so I think that for when you're making a film, you have to be so moved by passion, and that's what inspires all art for me. For this film, I wanted to create visuals that asked questions. I wanted this film to sort of touch everyone's heart in a different way that each person could have their own unique experience with the film. It's all about the micro and macrocosm. It's about environmental issues, but sort of showing you know, what could happen, ask questions about what's going on now, but what could happen in the future. I don't know.
Yeah, go ahead, Ben.
Yeah, I think that it's pretty abstract, but like the visuals are abstract, but there is definitely a narrative that's weaved through it. So like a chimera is an illusion, something that's hoped for. So I don't want to give away too much of it, but if you reach a point in human history where you can't go past, like environmentally, you can't go past like this singularity where you can't come back from it, chimera is something that's hoped for, saying that we're, like, if we're in the future, right? It's something that it's wished for, that we wish we could come back to a time where the earth wasn't scorched or whatever.
Yeah, and so this is perfect timing for your film. I just read a review in The New Yorker of a new film from, of all people, a guy with a sort of a hit or miss resume, Steven Spielberg. And his new film is Ready Player One. And I think it's set in 2045. Mm-hmm. And The New Yorker hated this film, just hated it. But there are some similarities between your short film and Ready Player One. So for everybody who's just turned off by that, but you're still looking for something interesting, good timing. You can fill that void that Spielberg whiffed on. People are going to be saying Ben Mills nailed it while Steven Spielberg whiffed, which is sort of not what you probably expected. So tell me a little bit about your filmmaking and backgrounds and how you ended up working together.
So I've been making films my whole life. Started with like a camera in the backyard with neighbors. Recently moved on to like bigger projects. I've been working on a feature all last year, and then I'm working on another feature now. It's all shot in Rochester. It's very low-key. Nobody's heard about it. It's my friends and I. But we're hoping to submit that to TIFF and some other larger festivals. I just have this total obsession with film and the visual art form. I want to do cinematography personally. I love the style of like Denis Villeneuve, Emmanuel Lubezki, and I want to sort of bring that into those styles into what we do.
And forgive me, Ben and Danielle, is this your first submission to Fast Forward?
Yeah.
It is?
This yes. is ours, yeah.
Yes.
Okay, and take me through the process then of, how you really got keyed in on what was happening with Fast Forward, knowing then that if you create a film, it's a lot of work to do a film very, very well at a high level, but there's still less than 1 in 5 chance you're going to get into a festival. Take me through that process and how you first learned about it and decided to do this then.
Well, actually, my sister last year won the youth category for the Fast Forward Film Festival. Her short, The Decay, was beautiful, and she is a filmmaker as well, and she sort of inspired me to do this year. Environmental issues have always been very close to my heart, so I thought that this would be a great opportunity to create something, and... I knew Ben. We sort of connected through film. We grew up sort of together, and I've been out in California the last 3 years, and I was working as an actress in LA. So I recently moved back to Rochester, and I love it here. So it was great that we could sort of mix themes of Rochester, but our film sort of touches everywhere, I guess.
Can I ask where you shot the film?
The film was shot almost entirely just in Victor. We just found, and Danielle's basement. really high budget. there's this beautiful open field in Victor with this very menacing tree that's just in the middle of it, and sort of like it's just a beautiful place. I was there a few days earlier working like scouting for a music video I was working on. And sort of decided this would be a perfect place to sort of put our character.
So. Well, when did you find out you were in?
We found out, I don't know exactly the date. But
they make this announcement, was it pretty recent to the festival, pretty close to it, or was it, because you submit, and how long do you have to wait to find out?
We waited, a few weeks? I don't know.
Okay.
I can't remember exactly, but it's very recent that the jury has... weighed in.
And we submitted like the day before the deadline.
So. Creatures of deadline.
Yeah.
See? That's good. I can relate to that very, very well. So what was it like then to know you're in?
it's a humbling experience, obviously. It's cool to be able to, you know, have your film shown to an audience, especially something that you put time and effort into.
Are you nervous?
Yeah. Of course. It comes with the territory.
Well, that's there are Ben Mills and Danielle Moore behind Chimera, which is one of the 2018 official adult selections that you can see at the Fast Forward Film Festival coming up. On Twitter, Mike was asking if the festival is sold out, and the answer is no. And again, it's not marketing for the host to say this. This is not yet. It probably will be if you look at history as a guide, Andy.
Probably. Probably.
Okay. So, for people who want to see it, give them the details again coming up here.
There are two screenings, Friday, April 13th and Saturday, April 14th. On the 13th, it's at the Little Theater. On Saturday night, it's our gala event and award ceremony at the George Eastman Museum Dryden Theater. And for the last 3 years, we've been sold out for both and oversold. So go to fastforwardrock.org, get a ticket.
That's how you do that. And I want to ask Ben and Danielle what I also asked Sean Donnelly about what you hope to come out of your film. What does a successful showing end up doing for you and doing for the audience? What do you hope to come out of this, Ben?
So I think that it's important to tell a story visually and to open people's ideas. I'm more of a visual storyteller. So if people can come out of this with sort of, I don't want to say like a realization of anything, but if people could come out of it and just knowing that they make an impact on the environment and that it is important to, it's an important topic to discuss an open dialogue, that's important.
Okay. Danielle?
I would say with this sort of philosophical treatment, which is what I had hoped the film to be, that the audience leaves the theater just asking themselves questions, and hopefully, you know, spark something in their heart, because that ultimately that's what's going to cause change is people's hearts, and that's what we hope to do with the film.
How long is the film?
It's about 3 minutes.
See, look at that, svelte.
Yeah.
Power in 3 minutes, Andy.
Yeah.
Power in 3 minutes. And that is way shorter than the Spielberg film that the New Yorker heard about. which, by the way, actually, there's more similarities than you think with the Ready Player One. It's funny. A few minutes left, and I want to turn back to Kate McCardle, if I could, who is a member of the Advisory Council for the Fast Forward Film Festival and Community Outreach Coordinator at the New York State Pollution Prevention Institute. That term's come up several times this hour, so why don't we, as we get ready to close the hour, talk a little bit more about what the Pollution Prevention Institute is doing and what you want the public to know about
that
work.
Sure, yeah. So we have been around for 10 years right here in at RIT. And what's really unique about, we call it P2I, it's easier to say, is that we are connecting research that is happening not just at RIT, but at UB, Clarkson, and RPI in Troy, New York. And we're taking those new and innovative solutions and really applying them across New York State with businesses. So we provide technical support to businesses. But and so the 15 engineers there are working hard to accomplish those goals. I get to be the community outreach coordinator, which means that I run this community grants program, which actually funded the Fast Forward Film Festival. And the goal of that is it's how do we connect these technical solutions, but also empower communities to learn about these complex environmental problems and specifically what they can do about them. So we fund about 10 to 12 projects a year. And actually, it's terrific timing, Evan, because our RFA is going to be dropped in just a couple of weeks, which means that there'll be an opportunity to be funded. Any community in New York State can apply. So any non-for-profit organization, municipality, so government can apply, and also schools and universities can apply for the funding. And the goal is really just to communicate and educate the public on complex environmental problems. So it can be anything from how to reduce waste, and certainly we've gotten a lot of applications for reducing waste, but changing out, some personal care products. Mm-hmm. They're vastly different. We have some that relate to energy efficiency programs as well. So I would urge listeners to look into that across the state, and we'll be putting out soon, be marketing our RFA
Online where?
Yeah. So we are at, you can just Google it at RIT's site, but NYSB2I.
Okay. .edu. And 30 seconds, Andy, I asked the filmmakers what they want their films to do. What do you want the Fast Forward Film Festival to do?
I really have nothing to add. Listening to these three filmmakers is inspiring. I got a little tearful. Daniel, especially listening to you. I know. I do. It's true. Goldilocks and the Three Bears, I just bawled. But Daniel, hearing you about touching hearts, right? It's not so much about data as it is about touching hearts, and you said it way better than I could.
Well, in so many ways, that is so true. You can throw as much data as you want, but sometimes personal stories and filmmaking and that sort of emotion can also drive action. We'll see. Fast Forward Film Festival coming up April 13th, the screenings, Fast Forward Rock, that's ROC.org for ticket information. And I want to thank our guests for being here, Dr. Andy Stern, the founder. Good to have you back. Thank you for being here.
What a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Always great fun. Kate McCardle, member of the Advisory Council for the Fast Forward Film Festival, among many other hats she wears in this community.
Thank you, Evan.
Thank you, Kate. Good to have you. Ben Mills, Danielle Moore, good luck with Chimera. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And Sean Donnelly with Superhouse. It's not Passive House, Superhouse. Thank you.
Thank you.
More connections coming up.